we used to say back in the day, I've got 15 to 20 minutes, I'm going to use all 20. Because you can't cover the whole history of the Black Panther Party or anything like that, or talk about today's issues in a very little time, and then we will have question and answer. I want to talk about I want to start out by saying what we used to say in the Black Panther Party, because I think it's what we're really talking about right now, and that is a power to the people. All power to the people. That's what we're talking about. And I don't mean just a few of us, I mean all of us, and I mean all of us together, not a few of us who are here, but all of our people who are not here. I want to say something about the history of the Black Panther Party, but I do want to mention that I was the chairman of the Black Panther Party, not to be confused with the chairperson or the chair, because we really didn't care. The office was called chairman, so that's the office I took over, and so that's the name of, my title was chairman of the Black Panther Party. And I want to just mention very, very briefly that a lot of people wonder, you know, how did you get to be the chairman of the Black Panther Party? And there were people who have asked me many times, well, did you somehow, I rose through the ranks as though, you know, there was some, you know, sort of corporate board, and I sort of got elected to the chairmanship of the corporation. And people thought, said, well, did you sleep your way to the top, you know? And I was accused at one time of having slept with Bunchy Carter. Some guy asked me, said, well, did you sleep? I heard you slept with Bunchy Carter, with Eldridge Cleaver, and with Huey Newton, and that's how you got to be the chairman of the Black Panther Party. What do you say to that? I said, well, the first thing I say is I never slept with Bunchy Carter. And the second thing I would say, you don't know who he is, but suffice it to say he was well known among the ranks of the Black Panther Party. The second thing I would say is that Eldridge Cleaver slept with half the women in the state of California, in and out of the Black Panther Party at the time. And the third thing is that Huey Newton surely slept with the other half, okay? And none of those women became chairman of the Black Panther Party. So what can we conclude? So the question is, what can we conclude about that? And what we might conclude is that either that was not the criterion for becoming chairman of the Black Panther Party, or I must have had the baddest pussy in the state of California. An absurd question with an absurd answer. That's too many women start defending themselves and how they did this and how they did. Stop, you know. Let's take it there. Now let's talk about the Black Panther Party, because I know a lot of you have heard of the party, but most people know very little, because the American public school system is not going to teach you anything. It takes a lot to root out that information and find information about these organizations to really have a sense. And since we're not dead yet, Kathy and Heather, thank goodness, I suppose. We're not yet dead yet. What we get to do is tell the story. And so let me just say something about the Black Panther Party, because that has to be contextualized as a part of the continuation of the black struggle for freedom from the time of the Emancipation Proclamation. Because black people, of course, in 1865, after the end of the Civil War, and Lincoln allegedly freed the slaves and all that mythical history that we have read in our book, history books, when the 13th Amendment was passed, before it was even ratified in the South where the majority of black people lived, you had something passed, a series of laws passed that collectively came to be called the Black Codes. The Black Codes regulated the behavior of blacks and primarily criminalized blacks for being, quote, vagrant. That is to say, if you didn't have a job, you could go to jail. Sounds almost like today, doesn't it? So we had the Black Codes and the criminalization of black people at the time. At the same time, you had the rise of the KKK and other white terrorist organizations. At the same time, we had the failure of the 40 Acres Plan. The 40 Acres Plan, of course, was to do what? To provide to every former slave family 40 acres of land to get started after 250 years as slaves, not just as slaves, but as property, not just as property, but having no relevance to the society at all, being called by Jefferson an inferior people, being told by the Jacksonians that America was a white Anglo-Protestant Saxon country and that blacks really had no place to be, and Lincoln himself saying that he always knew that the white race was superior, no matter whatever the Emancipation Proclamation said about freeing the slaves in the seceding states. Now, I've mentioned this history because if you don't contextualize it, then you start thinking of it as some sort of romantic imagery of the Black Panther Party and not seeing it in its context. You had in 1896 what? You had the law, the Supreme Court ruling in what? Plessy. Plessy versus Ferguson was a story of Plessy, a light-skinned black who tried to get on a train in Louisiana. Louisiana law said it was segregated trains. Plessy first said he wasn't really that black. That was his first argument to the Supreme Court. I shouldn't even be categorized as black. I'm an octoroon. That's how sad the story is in this world. And then went on to say, well, if I am black, then I have the right as a citizen to sit on the same car with whites. And the court said, well, here's the thing. We can't regulate social arrangements. So your citizenship rights do not extend to private enterprise. So we are saying that as long as you have equal accommodations, they can be separate. And, of course, that was the beginning of what? American apartheid. Now, if you don't know that, that's 1896. So that's just a little over 100 years ago. And the rest of the story is fighting how to survive in the land of Plessy without 40 acres and being criminalized under black codes and so forth and so on. And so we have a struggle that took place. At the same time, the influx of European immigrants coming in, you know, giving you tired, you're poor, so they can be exploited as workers in the industrial worker fields. And so to keep the blacks out of industry, because America was basically through with blacks. We had already grown all the cotton, so that America was the biggest producer of cotton in the world. We'd already picked all the rice or developed all the rice and been through all the rice paddies in South Carolina that made South Carolina the largest producer of rice and so forth. So now America was finished. The steam engine was here. It was time to roll west, kill some more native people, and get started on a new wave of industrialization as we now are in the new wave of what? Technological advance. And so at that pivotal moment, blacks really had no role to play. Poor Europeans come being brought in under contract workers and so forth and so on. And so here we were battling not for freedom of the press or any of these abstract, nebulous freedoms that we can't really eat or live by, but for survival, for food, for housing, for jobs, for health care, and for those things that you need just to get through the day, okay? And so what black people did was Booker T. Washington led the call that said that, look, we're not going to try to integrate into your society. We will be like five fingers on the hand. For all things economic, we'll be as one, but for social things, we'll be separate, because we're really not trying to marry your daughters. We're just trying to survive, and so we will stay where we are. A lot of people thought Booker T. Washington was a reactionary, as he's been revisited and revisited, but the bottom line was this was a way for a former slave to try to figure out how are we going to survive in a hostile, strange land. Then you had, of course, the Du Bois tendency coming in at the turn of the century talking about integration into America. And then you had Marcus Garvey following up on the program of Booker T. Washington talking about economic independence for blacks and so forth. Now, why am I just talking about black people, especially in a room dominated by whites? And you have to acknowledge these differences, because if you don't acknowledge them and act like they don't matter, then you don't get what the drill is here. And the drill is that if the destiny of black people in America is absolutely tied to the destiny of white people in America. You cannot have a completely oppressed large percentage of the people and pretend that you have a free country. Okay? So our destinies are all tied together. Now, so here comes Marcus Garvey talking about economic independence for blacks. And of course, little J. Edgar Hoover was already on the scene, getting ready to destroy folks from the get-go in late 1920s, oust Marcus Garvey from the United States and so forth. And then we have a situation where blacks began to do all kinds of things different programs and campaigns about don't shop where you can't work, anti-lynching campaigns and so forth. These were all survival measures that were taking place at the beginning of the turn of the century, in the 10s, 20s, the 30s, and so forth and so on. And of course, we get to that great moment in 1954 when little Linda Brown tries to go to school in Topeka, Kansas, and says, look, I'm tired of walking 4 miles down the road to a burned-out, segregated school. I would like to come to school right across the street here. And the Supreme Court takes case, NAACP takes the case to the Supreme Court, and we get the decision in Brown. And what does Brown say? It says, we overturn Plessy as to public education, and we're saying that separate is not equal to public education, and we call for the desegregation of American schools. Now, do we know of any battle that got more ugly than it did when white people in America found out that their children would have to sit next in the public schools with black children? Than that. And it wasn't just, of course, in Mississippi, it was in Massachusetts. And it was everywhere throughout America. We had bloodshed over the simple question of the desegregation of schools. Of course, today we realize that schools have been completely resegregated. Huh? Not that it matters, because the schools aren't teaching very much to anybody anyway, but nevertheless, they are segregated. 1955, we had, of course, that moment when Rosa Parks, like Plessy, 60-some years before, tried to get on a bus in Montgomery, said she wasn't going to sit, give up her seat to anybody. Can you imagine that from 1865, here we are at 1955, trying to talk about just getting a seat on a bus? We're not even talking about 40 acres. We're not talking about food. We're not talking about housing. We're not talking about health care. We're talking about just getting a seat on a bus. And, of course, this gave rise to what we now can think of as the civil rights movement, with Dr. King leading, giving moral voice to why America had to change and be turned around. And, of course, given the rise of television and so forth, everybody around the world was now seeing America and the dogs and all the pictures that we now see, because that's how we think of the civil rights movement, rise of various organizations. People, you got Ella Baker, you got a book coming out, some information about her, Ella Baker, people like Ella Baker and the SNCC people and all these various organizations, the Freedom Riders, and eventually there was a call for black power. And nobody really knew what it meant, but all of us who were black kind of liked that. We liked what it was. We didn't know what it was, but we wanted it. So we wanted some power. We wanted to be black, too. You know, at the same time, you had the 63 March on Washington, and we had the 64 and 65 Civil Rights Bill passed around the same time as Watts was burning and as Johnson was invading the Gulf of Tonkin. And you had a bunch of people running around the world, running around this country, talking about we don't want to have any, no more war. And those voices included not only Martin Luther King, one of the few blacks who was actually calling for an end to the war in Vietnam, and was denounced by a lot of the other moderate blacks and other blacks, and the Black Panther Party coming into being in 1966. And what was the Black Panther Party? The Black Panther Party also came out of that whole notion of black power, but we were talking about black liberation. And what did we mean by that? We identified that in a 10-point platform and program. We said we wanted, in essence, we wanted food, clothing, housing, justice, education, peace, land. These were the things that we wanted, very concrete, not an abstract struggle, but a very concrete struggle. But we said, how can we talk about the liberation of black people in the face of the complete oppression and almost the murder, complete genocide of the indigenous people? We said we couldn't do it. We couldn't talk about our freedom in the context of the oppression of Native people. And so we helped to form a coalition with the American Indian Movement. Leonard Peltier is still in prison today behind the activities of AIM. So how can we be free when the Mexican Chicanos are picking all that food in California and the entire country is eating that food? If you're a vegetarian, you're still eating that food and it's still being picked by exploited workers. So don't get excited about yourself. So we cannot be free as long as the Chicano population in California and elsewhere. So we helped to form the coalition with the Brown Berets. How can we talk about freedom in America when the Puerto Rican workers in the industrial fields of New York can't find any kind of freedom? We can't be. So we helped to form the coalition with the young lords. How can we be free when poor white people in Appalachia and elsewhere cannot get jobs and can't even get running water in many cases? So we helped to form a coalition with and formed the Patriot Party coming out of Chicago. We already had coalitions with the Peace and Freedom Party, with FDS, and ultimately with the Weather Underground and so forth. And so we talked about coalition building and said, well, wait a minute, how can we be free when half the country is oppressed? And we were the only black organization to call for women's liberation as a part of the liberation of black people. How can we be free when gays are oppressed in America? As a matter of fact, Huey Newton issued one of the first statements about gay liberation and said, perhaps the homosexual is the most oppressed person in America. So we formed coalitions with gay liberation organizations. How can we be free when people who are handicapped in wheelchairs can't even have access to the most minimal kind of independence as human beings? So we formed a coalition with the Center for Independent Living and helped to tear down some of these walls so that people could do that. How can we talk about our freedom when the environment is polluted? And so we talked about forming coalitions with the Trust for Public Land and other environmental groups. So how can we talk about freedom in America when the Vietnamese are oppressed by these very same people? So we supported the Viet Cong. As a matter of fact, we called for victory for the Vietnamese. We talk about our freedom when the people of South Africa are not free. So we formed a coalition with the PAC. What about in Mozambique? Formed a coalition with Frelimo. What about in Cuba? Formed a partnership with the Cubans. What about China? What about the world? We became revolutionary internationalists, and that's what the Black Panther Party was about ideologically. You have to know that to understand where it's going. It came from a black liberation struggle, and to understand that our liberation was absolutely inextricably tied to the liberation of all the people, oppressed people of the world. And when we see that, we'll begin to understand what's going on. I want to say briefly that we had an agenda. We had an ideology. We were communists with a small c. We could have been any number of other things, but for the sake of argument right now, we'll just say we were communists with a small c. Certainly not communists with a big C. We were not being operated by these reactionaries in Moscow. We had an agenda. Our agenda was our platform and program, as I've mentioned. We had strategy. Our strategy had to do with survival programs, what we called our survival programs under the slogan Survival Pending Revolution. That is to say, how can you talk about organizing people when they can't get health care? It's very difficult to get up in the morning and talk about revolution now when you have breast cancer. It's very difficult to get up when your children are dying of toxic mold in the walls. So we started talking about health clinics, free clinics for the people, free food for the people, free busing to prisons programs, and so many people were in prison. And of course we were identified as the greatest threat to the internal security of the United States by the FBI and other agencies of the government, who raised up COINTELPRO and put it down on us as hard as it came down on anybody at all, with the murder of Fred Hampton and other people murdered in our organization, so forth and so on. At the same time, we struggled very hard to try to change the minds and hearts of people in this country so that we could begin to build a revolutionary force. Now, we're going to talk about some of the mistakes we made, and I hope that you'll ask me those questions. Our ideal that we were going to have revolution now, that just because we thought about it and clicked our heels together three times, revolutionary change was going to occur. That we didn't have to do any real work, and we did do real work. We did our survival programs. We did all that, but we were crushed from within and from without. I think the one thing I want to leave you with right now in this time that I have remaining is to talk about the conditions today. Because for black people, the conditions are effectively the same as they were in 1966 when the Black Panther Party was started. In fact, as a matter of fact, it might be worse. We have massive poverty in America, not only among blacks, but among whites. We have the resegregation, as I said, of American schools and of affirmative action. Black infant mortality is the same as it was then, double that of white infant mortality. So-called black wealth, blacks own 1% of all business revenues in the United States of America from blacks. And then we have the thing I want to focus our attention on as far as my talk is concerned is the new slavery. We have 2 million people in the United States who are in prison, over 6 million people who have been in prison or are in prison collectively today in the United States of America. Of course, we have the largest incarceration and maintaining the largest prison system in the world. This is the United States of America. I know that you know that. I know you know about the three strikes crime bills. I know that you know that people are going to prison for drugs, but I know one of the things that you have to realize is that we're not only incarcerating 50% of those people who are incarcerated are black, over 1 million people in prison who are black. Question is, why is this true, and how did it come to be true? This goes to a new age of racism in America where we pretend we don't really have racism because it all died somehow with Martin Luther King and everything was okay and we don't know what's wrong today. And we have children who are in prison, particularly young black boys throughout America, millions of them. And so what I'm hoping today is that we get to talk about where we can go, that the most important thing that we have to discuss among ourselves of all these tendencies that you have and all these interests that you have, whether you're talking about women's issues or gay issues or human rights or animal rights or environmental questions or World Trade Organizations or any other things that you're talking about, that we have to have a common ideology and we have to have some common goals and we have to stop being so arrogant that we think we're the ones with the answer, because you see the mass of the people are not here. The mass of the people here in D.C. are black and they're not here. So one of the things we have to know is how we're going to move beyond this moment right here and organize ourselves toward a true agenda of liberation and freedom. And I hope that that's where we're going, because revolutionary change must take place. We are in a stage, we're finally reached the ultimate stage, and that's global fascism. And it's not just been led by Bush. Clinton put a lot of pieces in place. Okay, the Negro president, who Thomas Jefferson was the Negro president because he won with three-fifths of a counting the three-fifths of a man that the black was. And so I want to close by saying that in our questions and in our answers and our discussion, the one thing I hope that you will take away today is what can we do together that's really going to galvanize the masses of people in this country. Because we have a duty as Americans, because this country is in charge of the world. It has all the guns. It has all the money. Everybody else is a subject of this country. There are hardly any more countries to speak of. From France to China, they all don't matter because there's only one army, and that army is led by George Bush and Rich and Dick Cheney and Halliburton and whatever else there is. We don't even know what some of these pieces are. It's time for us to take this down, but it's time for us to form a serious agenda. It's not enough to have a ring in your nose and wear some dreadlocks or whatever else you're doing with your cultural style questions. The bottom line is we have to reach the mass of people and create the kind of struggle where we can really truly bring about a new wave of energy so that we can talk about revolutionary worldwide revolution and have an enlightened and new society where truly there is a redistribution of wealth and human beings have all the things we need to live a decent life.